Be sure, okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in Excess Astrology, where every week three astrologers gather together to have a conversation and to talk to you about what's going on in the weekly weather and what it feels like energetically and how to work with it. My name is Ann Ortley, and I'm an astrologer in New York City, and I'm sitting here at my bright red desk on the Upper East Side, surrounded by cats and with a nice glass of iced tea by my side. And I am joined by...
This is Heather Rowan Robbins speaking to you from St. Paul, Minnesota, and surrounded by my dogs and a nice glass of bubbly water.
Yeah.
It's a hot night here.
It is a hot night here in New York, too. Mm-hmm. We are ready for summer to arrive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Heather, what did you notice about the week ahead? Kind of rocking and rolling out there, I tell you.
It is indeed. First of all, Mars enters Virgo and shifts the focus. Mars has been in Leo for six
forever.
Months now. Forever. And
forever.
And it only spends 2 months in a sign, but it was 6 months here.
Mm-hmm.
And we were kind of tired of the... there's a blustery quality to Mars in Leo, and anger if it's not being paid attention to. Mars in Virgo, it gets, you know, because Mars talks about what makes us angry, as well as how we handle our passion and our excitement and all kinds of things. But Mars in Virgo, we're angry if the work is not done. Now,
mm-hmm.
I'm seeing that Mars in Virgo is going to be very helpful. It's going to sharpen the critique around the Gulf crisis, but Mars in Virgo is cleanup.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it's going to be trining Pluto.
Mm-hmm,
so it's
mm-hmm.
Mars in Virgo, the real effort, the collective effort, if we can not waste the time in Virgo criticism, which makes us feel better. It's a stress reliever, but it doesn't solve the problem.
Right.
And keep Virgo, Mars in Virgo, focused on the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And what does it want to do instead? There's a very powerful lineup there. Now, Mercury's going to be squaring it towards the end of the week, just as I go visit my family. Not always good. But any critique, that tongues will sharpen, critique will sharpen, and accident-prone quality picks up towards the end of the week. So I'm going to keep an eye on that. As Mars changes into a Mercurial sign and Mercury changes into the Mercurial sign of Gemini, and they form a right angle. So a lot of nervous energy, a lot of excitement, a lot of communication, you know, and also as Mercury enters Gemini, also our brains think faster but not always deeper. There will be those that jump to conclusions or just spat off with opinions and don't really look at the consequences of their action. But I think there's some real excitement as that Mercury and Gemini sextiles Jupiter and Uranus, and Jupiter and Uranus conjunct. Some real ingenuity, but problem-solving brilliance is going to come online this week. I noticed that the new iPhone was announced today as Mercury went exactly sextile, as moving into an exact sextile with Uranus and Jupiter, and suggests that that new iPhone will be quite a success with the aspects going on it today.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
What did you notice this weekend?
Well, I'm really paying attention to the Jupiter-Uranus union.
Mm-hmm.
Jupiter
That's
went
cute.
Into Aries. I mean, last week we had Uranus mm-hmm. go into Aries, which is first mm-hmm. time in 84 mm-hmm. years. And
mm-hmm.
I have a strong signature of that in my chart. So I,
mm-hmm.
you know, I always mm-hmm. am very curious for the Uranus transits. And I find that there was a real shift in the energy. People just suddenly are like, okay, now I'm ready to go do something. I don't even know what, but I got to do something. I got to do something.
Uh-huh.
There's this sense of urgency kind of popping up with the Uranus
uh-huh.
in Aries.
Uh-huh.
And now this week, Jupiter comes to join it. And so what he does is he kind of expands it and makes it bigger and juicier and fatter. At the same time
uh-huh.
that that's going on,
uh-huh.
Mars in Virgo is in conjunct to that Aries placement. And so what he's doing
yes.
is saying, not so fast, big guys. You got to hold on a little. You don't actually know what you're doing yet. So there's an energy of having to live in the moment and adjust as we're moving forward. There's like this, okay, now I'm ready to finally take action,
mm-hmm.
but I don't really know where I'm going yet. Or I know I'm ready, but I don't really know how, because Mars in Virgo
mm-hmm.
is the how. And they're
mm-hmm.
fighting right now. Aries planets
mm-hmm.
always kind of jump off, no offense to Aries planets, but they jump off the cliff without the parachute, and they go, wait, forgot the parachute. And the Virgo is saying, you know, before you do that, guys, let's have a plan. Mm-hmm. And so while they're ready to roar and ready to fly, there's also this energy of not quite. Because the and once that clears, I think it'll be very nice. But I have to say, this week has been kind of a, I'm ready to go, but I can't just yet. I'm ready to go, but I,
mm-hmm.
it's that
mm-hmm.
stop and go energy. But it's a very mm-hmm. much more wanting to go, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
And the good
mm-hmm.
part, that Aries kick up, it's going. And the other thing I liked was I had all these people, or I noticed, I guess it's better, I don't think I liked it. I had all these people with water issues, meaning they were dehydrated or they had the flu. There was a guy here who
mm-hmm.
got, you know, disappeared for a while and they finally found him and he was in a swamp, you know, sucking on sawgrass. And I had four or five older relatives or old friends of older, you know, relatives of older relatives of friends having
mm-hmm.
dehydration issues. And, you know, a friend of mine actually got taken to the hospital. We sent him to the hospital in an ambulance on Friday because he was dehydrated, you know, and he'd been ill, and, you know, and he had to go, kind of, and it was Uranus, you know, the Saturn and the Neptune are in conjunct, too, so in his case, it was a gallbladder thing, and it was in conjunct with Neptune, so he got very dehydrated because he couldn't drink. The other guy, it was he swerved to avoid hitting a deer, and his car went off the road, and he laid on the ground for 4 days till they found him, and it's this kind of, you know, we're ready to go, but not just yet. Gotta wait. Or you're ready to go, but live in the moment because you don't really have the full plan yet. So it's that sense of urgency without really a direction to it. So I find it really interesting because I know with me, I'm like, okay, I gotta, and then I'm like, I gotta what? You know? And it's that, what do I gotta do? It's I'm ready, but then I pause. So it's a very
mm-hmm.
stop and go energy
mm-hmm.
and exciting. And I also find I'm breaking things. Like I came to the desk today, I just put a little glass of iced tea together and it had a crack in it. And I'm like, oh,
mm-hmm.
that's one of my favorite glasses. So off
mm-hmm.
it went into the garbage, but, you know, it's time
and
for it
to
go.
And where do you see that happening astrologically?
That's the Mars-Uranus in conjunct. Mars and
mm-hmm.
Virgo is in conjunct
yes.
with Uranus, and then at the same time, Saturn is in conjunct to the Neptune.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's, the you know, two in conjuncts in the heavens say, ready to go, but not quite yet.
I also see that Mars opposed Neptune.
Yeah,
continuing health problems, continuing around water, liquids, and oils, and continuing accidents around those. So we're still working through and pushing that. Yes.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's kind of an interesting energy because it's like, okay, they got part of the thing stopped, but not all of it. But if they get it stopped,
mm-hmm.
they're going to have to take the top off when the hurricanes come, you know. It's like,
right.
okay,
and
so it's not really
the
stopped.
The cleanup is only begun.
Yeah, the cleanup
has
just begun.
Again, I'm just so hopeful that the sacrifice is not in vain. With that Jupiter-Uranus, it just seems like it was it's you know part of the job of this, and it's so sad that there has to be this job to do. But we would honor the death of those animals and people by allowing the change to happen. The Jupiter-Uranus, ingenious, brilliant, revolutionary aspect that is this whole year, but really triggering
right now, mm-hmm.
is all about you know that catalyst for change that I see this doing across political boundaries, across you know socioeconomic class, you know intellect and workers alike.
Mm-hmm.
are just saying, this has got to go. Something's got to change.
Right. This profit at any cost without knowing what we're actually
mm-hmm.
doing. Not a good plan.
Yeah.
Well, I also, you know, it was interesting because I had a few people write to me and say, you know, because I do that weekly column on my website.
Mm-hmm.
And I had
mm-hmm.
a few people write going, you know, Ann, what does this karmically mean? What does this mean? And I'm like, you know, I don't really know. And then I kind of was
mm-hmm.
thinking about it when I was in the shower, and I thought, you know, there's a payback on things. And
mm-hmm.
I... You know, I hate, there's a part of me that as I get older, I wait for it sometimes, you know, like, well, what's
mm-hmm.
the payback going to be on this?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little part of me that goes, you know, we stole all that oil in Iraq,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know? And
mm-hmm.
there's a little part of me that goes, I wonder if this is payback for that. On a
mm-hmm.
cosmic level, certainly not on a necessarily,
mm-hmm.
you know, tit-for-tat thing. But that oil that was spilled, that was stolen oil. And now we have our version of losing that much oil with the economic damages that come with it, where we didn't actually get invaded, but it got balanced. And I was kind of thinking about that, and I thought, you know, I hate to, there's a part of me that goes, oh, Ann, you sound so Catholic when you say things like that. But I also, there's an energy to this that just feels very much about we're not going to let it continue the way it's been continuing. And when I saw Pluto and Ceres cooperating in the chart, and they don't normally get along, but they both are retrograde, and they're both putting aside old grudges, whatever those grudges might be, to be able to move forward. And I thought, you know, why would those two cooperate other than to say, you know, we need to work on this and maybe make people a little more aware or conscious.
Right.
So I was like,
well, they were the both, they were the two parents of springtime.
Yes.
And the image that out of them and out of their cooperation and their struggles comes a new beginning.
Right.
And I like that image.
Yeah, yeah. And with Persephone as the daughter who was abducted by Pluto, you know, the rape of Persephone. Some say, you know, she left and went willingly with him. She, you know, she fell in love but didn't tell her mother. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, what are the heavens trying to tell us from this position? And it's a fascinating thing to me. And also, as Chiron stationed, they got it to stop a little, but not a lot, but a little. And so it's like, all right, well, we'll see what happens. And I don't know. I just keep seeing, you know, people keep forwarding me pictures of ducks and pelicans.
And now
birds.
And now the cleanup begins as Mars goes into Virgo.
Yeah, no, just like the poor baby birds.
And now the cleanup begins, and it's going to be so hard. And I just do feel that sacrifice. And do we have, did I hear Mark
coming on? Mark, come on, Mark.
Yeah, that's me.
We heard the bell ring, Hi,
yes,
honey, how are you?
Okay.
Good.
Okay. I've been listening for a couple of minutes, and I came in. Ann was saying something about payback from something.
For the war in Iraq.
Oh,
we're talking about the karmic. What are the karmic process of this? And you know, it's hard to
tell.
Clients
were writing me to ask what the karmic process was, and I was like, you know, I don't know. But then I was in the shower, and I thought, payback from Iraq. I thought, well, that's a
and
little...
And catalyst for change. You
and
know, we've been wasting so much oil.
Yes.
In Europe, gasoline is $10 a gallon, and they use it much more preciously. That, you know, we found this commodity. I think it's going to be so strange looking back in history that we found this amazingly precious commodity and burnt through it in a little over 100 years.
Yeah.
And it's going to be gone, and there's no way to make more. So I think seeing how we've wasted it, to see it come back and waste us and be wasted, just blowing apart. That now how do we – so like the microcosm of our relationship to fossil fuel here.
Right, right. And I think also somewhere in our life we're having a gusher, you know.
Exactly.
It's, you know, it's an underwater volcano. It's not an above water volcano, but it still counts. When you watch the
stuff
moving out of it,
Yeah, we talked last week about how wild the dreams have been, and
yes,
I continue to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And the strange, you know, I'm starting to see whenever I see something like an underwater volcano or, you know, earthquakes, I often see that happen in the news, and you start seeing the guy in Florida who, you know, shot seven women today. Or you know, some of our darker stuff comes up. We don't have to live it like that. We don't have to be so contentious.
No.
But it brings up the same issues and the same questions. How are we using our power? Where does our energy come from?
How are we not?
Are we doing it in a good and clean way?
Right. Are we spilling fuel all over the ocean floor and polluting the world around us? Yeah.
Are we spewing bad thoughts? I mean, it's a lot. I'm not saying good thoughts, bad thoughts, but so much is just looking at our psychic hygiene. Are we being, you know, are we taking responsibility for where our thoughts go and where our mind goes, what our energy goes, where our intentions go? Mark, what do you see is important this week? Jump on in.
Oh, let's see. Well, you know, we have the Jupiter-Uranus business in zero Aries. I think that overshadows everything.
Huge.
Yep.
Tell us what's your take on that.
Well, when you combine them, I mean, Uranus moving into Aries is a huge thing. It's setting up a whole decade's worth of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Uranus sort of jumping in at the same time, it's a much lesser splash, Uranus
mm-hmm.
splashing into the Aries pool. But when you do it, it's almost like...
Put together.
It's mm-hmm. kind of like Jupiter's role in that is to draw even more attention to it, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
like look, you know, like as if we weren't going to notice, which we might not have in as
mm-hmm.
much of a way. But when Jupiter piles onto anything, it just makes the whole splash bigger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they're both kind of tricking us because they jump into Aries with a splash, and then they sort of sneak back into Pisces soon. And they don't throw it away. They take it back. And then they'll come into Aries again. When is it? Next February they come in again?
February. One's in January and one's in March.
Yeah.
The average is February, yeah.
Yeah. So they're kind of, in a way, this is, you know, it's a prelude. But to a big thing. And we're certainly seeing a lot of the Uranus and Aries energy.
Right.
Just things have been already ratcheted up quite a bit. And, that's what we're going to see. So there's, and it gives us a chance as they back into Pisces to sort of rethink it and say, well, wait a minute. No, we are going to have to deal with this. And we are going to deal with it for many years. How do we want to use it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll all, in a way, be doing that kind of rethink and saying, okay, this is for real. How do I want to use it? Because Uranus's energy is not an easy one to understand, especially on a kind of a global level. We can kind of try all kinds of different things, and if we just keep splashing that energy around, we'll get things that are very splashy and surprising and big and revolutionary and all that. But we might not be able to use it well. You know, you can do a lot of revolutionary things, and then they fizzle out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really look at it well, and even sometimes the revolution starts before you've really got a plan. But if somewhere early in the revolutionary process, you can sit down and come up with some good plans. Like if we look at revolutions that have succeeded well, like we can say that our country's revolution succeeded well, and there was really a lot of thought that went into it. The whole Declaration of Independence, very thoughtful document. And at some point, now there were a lot of little things that led up to that. We didn't begin with that document, but there was a whole phase of being fed up with, you know, being ruled as colonies and people saying, hey, you know, we've got our own continent here. What are we, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think self-determination might be the key word, would you say, for Aries?
Yeah. And for Uranus, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, but in any case, the startup of that revolution, it started with a lot of revolutionary acts, you know, this, that, and so on. And then at some point, people said, you know, we've actually got something going here. Let's try to form it, you know. Or another one would be...
Let's try and shape it into something else, yeah.
Yeah, let's try to shape it and give it some thought and really decide where it's going to go. And then we can use that revolutionary energy to create something, not just to revolt against what was there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the real key, is knowing what direction we're going, not just that we're fed up with where we were. And I think that's what makes any of these uranium sort of changes actually stick as something useful is if at a certain point early on we can say, oh, what exactly is it we're trying to go toward? And of course it won't be exactly what you think, but especially with Uranus involved. But there is a need for that moment where we say, where do we want to take it, not just what are we revolting against.
Right.
Because if you just revolt, you can throw out the whoever you're tired of, you throw them out, that's it, we're done. But then if you haven't organized something new, you just have ongoing chaos. And we've seen that happen with revolutionary things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, where there's no plan, it doesn't form, it doesn't come together, and then you have like this perpetual revolution that goes on, and it doesn't lead to a new form.
Doesn't lead to a new form, it's just change. Change again, yeah. Okay, no, change again, that's, we're still not happy with that, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I don't know
so,
how you get the sustaining piece in. You know, that's the part that I do think is a little bit of trouble, because it's how do you get it to lock and stay rather than continuing to change for change's sake? And so that's, I think, as we approach the revolution that we're going to be going through, you know, with Uranus and Pluto arguing 7 times over the next few years, we're going to be asked to say, well, okay, what's your vision for how this stops changing? Or at what point have you reached where you can go with it? And it, you're going to let it then settle in and grow in a new way. Because, you know, it can also, revolution can be almost like picking a scab. It just starts to heal. Then you go, no, 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 that's not right. Throw it out again.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'll be interesting because, you know, as a society, we haven't gone through this process as conscious adults. You know, it happened several hundred years ago when our founding fathers did it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens for the collective when we go through this again in the next few years as we go through the Uranus square. So.
Yeah, very much. And, yeah, then throwing Pluto into it. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, the whole business is going to – we're definitely – changing something,
mm-hmm.
changing form. And that's where I think a lot of it has to do with this, the global stage on which things are taking place.
Right.
And that's the raising of consciousness where we may realize that, you know what, this is bigger than any one nation. And look, here's an oil company from Britain drilling off of our coast and making a mess of, you know, we keep hearing about our states, but we're not the only ones that border the Gulf. And you have, you know, eventually the Caribbean islands could be affected. We don't know yet where all this is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more than one state, more than one country. And so we have to recognize that we're all on the planet together. And, you know, that energy and that consciousness has been building in many ways. And then I think a lot of these things are going to drive us toward it. And remember, Uranus is the great awakener.
Right. He says, wake up, people. Wake up, wake up. We've been sleeping. And we go, wait, we've been sleeping? Yep, we've been sleeping. You've been,
right.
Well, and I mean, just the whole the presence of it. You know, the other thing I noticed was, you know, there seems to be like follow-up and closure on stories that were long lingering. So we had the guy who, you know, was accused of but never tried for murdering Natalie Holloway, accused now in Peru. We had Lori Berenson sprung from prison after serving 14 years. She went in on Pluto in Sagittarius and came out now, as Pluto's out of Capricorn. So there's like a closure and a wrap-up for some of the stories. We've got, you know, a lot of my clients that have been thinking about divorce and not too sure are kind of like, well, Al Gore and Tipper can get divorced after 40 years. I guess I can, you know. And it's kind of like we're all in a position of reevaluating decisions made as we get ready to go into the next place. So I find it really fascinating because it is a major, major turning point time, too. That's the other piece. And there is a full moon, new moon this week. And then we go into... then we go into the eclipse season, which is very powerful, and it's again on the Cancer Capricorn nodes. And so it's about the structures that we've built in society to support us, and the things that we find that nurture us are going to be undergoing major changes, similar to what happened last summer when the nodes were also in Cancer Capricorn and many of the icons from our childhood left and moved on to different a different plane. So it's a really major time, you know, and I find it exciting if a little daunting. I've also found I'm very wiped out, you know, like I run and then I sit in a chair and I fall asleep, you know. If I sit down for more than 30 seconds, my body's like, okay, we're going to sleep now, Ann. And I'm like, I have things to do. Nope, we're going to sleep. So.
And what aspect do you see that? I mean, I see part of that, the Mars-Neptune. I think
it's the Mars-Neptune.
Sleep.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm being much more active in the sleep world. The
Yes, the dreams are rocking. And the Mars also in conjunct to the Saturn, or semi-sextile to the Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Saturn's, you know, Mars is in the dream land in conjunct to Saturn in Virgo. So it's kind of a... It's in the 12th house. So Mars is active and opposite the Neptune saying, okay, these dreams are rocking. And then, I mean, there have been really bizarre dreams too. And then it's like, okay. But then when I'm awake, I want to go to sleep, you know. And I'm not, I mean, I'm a good sleeper, but I'm not normally, I don't normally sit in a chair and fall asleep.
Mm-mm.
You know, I went to a conference this weekend and I was sitting in a chair in the middle of the room and I just was like, I'm warm, I'm comfortable. And I snoozed, you know. And it was an interesting lecture, but I probably slept through two-thirds of it. When we got to the afternoon after I had my coffee, I was a little more awake. But it was like I'm sitting in a chair, and this is like I don't have to move, and I can take a nap. So I think it's also recognizing that our bodies, because the energy is so volatile, that one of the things we're doing is finding change really upon us. You know, it's a very much a change upon us, change upon us. And so then you find when you need to go to sleep, you're wiped. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. So why don't I give out the number, 347-215-8881, 347-215-8881 for callers.
And we have permission from Leslie.
Pardon?
Press number one. Press number one.
Oh, and press number one, right, yeah. To raise your red hand so we know to call on you.
And we have permission from Leslie to talk about her chart and a little bit more information about it. The chart that we brought up last week and said we can't really continue without information from her directly. So Leslie was born on March 11th, 1964 at 3:41 a.m. in Boston, Massachusetts. It's a fairly interesting story that's asking both health questions, and if she calls in, it would be helpful because if she's listening, because might have some questions for her directly. But her story is that she apparently was adopted, and she learned of her birth mother's whereabouts on February 9th of this year. She immediately developed digestive issues, acute ischemic colitis, the day before Mother's Day on May 8th, almost exactly 3 months to the day after learning of her birth family's history. She planned to send a letter to her birth mother after her birthday and Mother's Day to alleviate any pressure on her to contact me right away, she said, so she could think about it on her own time. But since getting out of the hospital, I've had another hospital visit for respiratory issues and unsuccessful endometrionic ablation earlier this week for reproductive issues that cropped up suddenly. Now, it's interesting that Chinese medicine associates lungs and respiratory issues with grief, and she had trouble with digestive system, which is receiving nurturance, and reproductive issues, which is about the possibility of being a mother or reproductive issues. So with the other end of it. She says, I'm very active and physically fit person generally. Eat well, rest a lot. This is the first time she's had any real ailments in her life beyond your basic common colds and flu. And we don't know at what time she was put up for adoption, which will be one of my questions, or if she has any information about her birth mother's health and her birth mother's astrology would be interesting questions. But her chart has her as a Capricorn rising, Aquarius moon, and Mars, Mercury, Sun, all conjunct in Pisces. And those are opposed Pluto and Uranus in the 8th house. Now, she has Pluto and Uranus in the 8th house. It looks to me like... lower colon is also associated in Chinese medicine with the lungs. And she has Uranus and Pluto in the eighth house in Virgo. And that, so where her body's going to feel the stress of the unspoken power issues and the difficulties and the problems will be around eighth house issues, which is reproduction and elimination.
Right.
And it's in Virgo, and it's right there as being inflamed. And I don't think it's going to get any better while Mars heads into that.
No. Do you have, what time did you have? Because I have those planets in the 7th.
3:41? Okay. I have 3:41 a.m.
in Boston.
Eastern Standard in Boston.
And you must use coke houses rather than Placidus.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do.
I use Placidus.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah,
right on the
I've got them in the 7th. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Oh,
and
that's
and
funny.
For people
have,
who are listening, go ahead. What
I have
about
Pluto
you,
in the 8th. I have Pluto in the 8th and Uranus in the 7th with Placidus. Oh,
right.
Well,
anyway, it's right. Yes, on the house cusp, 3:41 Eastern time. Yeah.
For the audience, usually when we're looking at different house cusp systems, the cardinal points, that's the rising, the descendant, the midheaven, and the IC are all the same. The interstitial house cusps are mathematical systems, and everybody's got a different theory on them.
I like the religion
you were raising. So we often think of them, right, is semi-permeable membranes, and you can usually feel those planets in both of those houses. If they're sitting there, I have a Saturn right on the cusp between second and third, depends upon which house system, and I can really feel it affect both.
Right. Because when you think about how big the sky is, there's no lines up there. And we're just drawing a little arbitrary line, and we're saying, okay, it's in the, but it's when within the edge. I do like 10 degrees on either side. You know, I kind of count it for both. So, yeah, I think one of the things that I noticed about Leslie's chart was the, you know, the correlation you had made to it, Heather, of all moon issues, that each of these, you know, the stomach is ruled by the moon as a container. The uterus is ruled by the moon as a container, and certainly it's the feminine function. And the lungs really are the container, are container too. So all the containers in her body are inflamed, and she has the moon in the first. She's also got Neptune stationing on Saturn right now. So that's saying, I found the structure, the system I was looking for, and do I want to proceed forward with it? So Neptune on the Saturn says, let's go and look at the story of it. And Saturn is the ruler of her chart and the ruler of her karma because it rules her 12th house and it rules her south node of what her parenting is and it rules her
series. And 12th house is long-term health issues and she's got south node in
Capricorn
there
anyway.
Right.
So it's kind of the Saturn, Neptune stationing on Saturn saying to her, okay, so like what are you going to do about all this stuff? And Saturn stationing in the house of eighth, which is the secrets of her birth, being revealed to her on some level, and in conjunct to her natal Saturn. So Saturn in conjunct Saturn is a health transit. You know, this would be a health transit whether she found her mother or she didn't. But she's tying it to the finding of her mother. And so the correlation then says, okay, that she found the mother at the same time that the reproductive areas and her containers are all going crazy on her, and they're going crazy in a Scorpio shape because it's a Scorpio-shaped in conjunct coming from the Scorpio placement, which is a psychological process. So it definitely, to my mind, says that there's a real strong mind-body connection between finding her family, but then at the same time, now that I found them, what do I do with them? And also all those Pisces planets speak to deeply, profoundly wanting to, in the eighth, second house of Taurus, saying wanting to know where she comes from, what her roots are, but then as a Pisces going, but my identity is partly tied up in being an orphan or not being from the tribe I'm from. So it's a really interesting time in her life. And I would say gentle. You know, her body is saying to her, don't go so fast. And the moon rules her sixth house of health and her seventh house of how she relates. And this is the kind of chart, you know, the Capricorn rising people can be very mean to themselves and say, okay, you have to do this, you have to do this.
Yeah, push themselves too hard.
And it sounds like her body's going, hey, you know, not so fast. You found them.
We're not going to let it. We're going to hug
her. We're going to put you in a bed and make you lay there and think about, now that you found them, do you really want to proceed? Because finding someone and then moving to the next step is a whole different level. Yeah.
Right. And Mars on her progressed tonight as we speak, the moon in Aries conjuncts her progressed Mars, which conjuncts her natal Jupiter in the third house. So she's really longing for information now. And I think that one of the pieces I'm picking up is that it's very important for her to be able to be, give herself room to be really pissed off, mm-hmm. and to not rile, to give herself, you know, I'm hearing the swallowing of anger and the swallowing of fear and sadness, and that she may need to first write a letter to the mother that she doesn't know, not the person that she actually wants to contact and hear their side of the story. But if she had room to really just say what it felt like to be put up for adoption and not, you know, all the questions, she may find out that the story is very different than she thinks. But she, I'd like to see her give herself room, like the adult in her lets the little child in her vent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now that
and
she knows
the
mother's alive.
And the adult in her
stands
to the side. Right. The mother, the adult in her can stand back and take care of her and say, you know, we don't need to believe the story. We're just going to let the child, you know, say, how could you, how dare you, what happened, and just get it out of the body so it's not sitting there eating up the insides.
Right.
And then burn that letter and start at a totally different letter of, hello, who are you,
mm-hmm.
to her real mother, because that's a different question, what she needs to get out of her and what she needs to say to her mother.
Right.
I think that's really a very good way to go about this, I think, and especially when you look in her natal chart and see that she has Neptune squaring her moon, and
mm-hmm.
of course
mm-hmm.
the moon
mm-hmm.
ruling the sixth and the seventh house and the
mm-hmm.
north node
mm-hmm.
in that sixth house,
mm-hmm.
all of it being Cancer, ruled by Moon. But with Neptune squaring the Moon, there is a real nebulousness around
mm-hmm.
not just the mother, who is Mommy, but
mm-hmm.
The actual, no matter who Mommy is or why the original birth mother isn't with us anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And there can be all kinds of reasons that, you know, someone can lose a mother. But it's not just why is she not with me, it's
mm-hmm.
how am I anyway going
mm-hmm.
to have my needs met,
mm-hmm.
my emotional needs, and how am I going to, from that sense of security and my needs being met, how will I be able to meet someone else's needs?
Yeah.
And those are the real questions. And so writing that first letter and expressing
mm-hmm.
whatever it is that having lost a mother,
mm-hmm.
you know, and let that letter be whatever spews out into it, right? And
mm-hmm.
then burning it, right? I think
mm-hmm.
that's really good
mm-hmm.
advice.
And maybe more
and
than one letter.
In,
it doesn't all happen in one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one that's very tearful, you know, one that's, you know, all the things that seem to have been missing. You know, go ahead and bring that out and then
mm-hmm.
set it aside. And the question of who this particular woman is, who's been identified as the biological mother but hasn't been
mm-hmm.
in your life, approach her as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And just let her speak for herself. And who knows what you'll find out. But it
yes.
won't be what you
no.
would imagine of your mother.
No.
Because she was not your mother.
No. And I also see that her progressed moon went into Scorpio 4 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just about the time that all of this started up.
Right.
And that's
right.
being at home in the mystery and being at home in some very primal emotions.
And now
and,
that progressed moon opposes the Venus.
Absolutely. Exactly right on. And
which
Scorpio is the sign that's associated with the eighth house, which is associated with reproduction and bowels.
Yeah. Yeah. And it opposes Venus, which is
mm-hmm.
her use of her own feminine energy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's up. So you have the progressed moon, again, another moon issue here.
Mm-hmm.
Now in opposition, through Scorpio, in opposition to her own Venus. And it's saying to her, there is something you need to look at here, which is how are you moving forward?
Well, and I think often when a child's adopted, certainly in the 60s, you know, you look at the chart to see what the story is, because the adopted child's chart speaks to that story. And in her case, you know, there's a part of my chart that would, you know, if I was talking to her, I'd say, so did you feel, like if your mother said, I'm giving you up for adoption because I think it'll be a better thing for you to have parents who can raise you, did you feel that the parents that raised you did a good job? Because with her moon and Saturn in the first house in Aquarius, that kind of speaks to her feeling like she didn't really fit in the family that she was in on some level. And so Venus is the ruler of the fourth house, which is the mother, you know, it describes both mothers, interestingly, because when you find your birth mother, very often the birth mother's chart is similar to the adoptive mother's chart because you're a transit in both of their charts. But Venus is in the 12th house of the mother. So to my mind, it looks like the mother was young, you know, and had pressure from above, Neptune, saying, you know, you have to do this. And so that moon-Neptune longing, the moon-Neptune square in her chart, that is the longing to know where she came from and why it happened, and then the Saturn rising stoicism of, well, I'm prepared for her not to want me. You know, the assumption in her email was that she might not want me, rather than she would want me.
Like, I don't want to put her on her
under any
pressure.
Yes. As opposed to saying, you know, I found you after all these years, and I've been looking for you, and I've been longing for you, and I've been wanting you, and here you are. And now I'm, now that I've found you, I don't know what happens if you don't want me. And that fear can make all those systems that she's got flying around, causing excitement in her chart, really, really active. And so it's about also being really kind, really, really kind to yourself, because that little girl in there is very afraid, and also because of your history with your balsamic moon of having these very intense relationships that leave your life suddenly because you're here wrapping up a karma cycle. And so you have that history already that you get these very intense relationships and then they zoom off. So there's a fear that having found the source of my life, it may just zoom off on me if I go and contact it. So it's a, you know, it's honoring where you are in this process and being very kind to yourself and getting support, getting yourself a little SWAT team that's supportive of you, whatever the outcome is, good, bad, or indifferent, and that you're, and notice, you know, because I heard it when you, when I read the email that, you know, in case she doesn't want me. I'm like, well, why would you think maybe she would want you? Maybe she's thought about you every day since she gave you up. The moon is in your first house, and the moon in Aquarius implies a separation that wasn't necessarily wanted, but that was perhaps forced by other people.
Societal expectations. It's a lot about very strong emotions fighting with societal expectations.
Yes. So.
It also says, you know, when I see that moon in Aquarius, someone who was raised by a community more than by specific intimate relationships. And so that it could be that the mother has, you know, I see it, the mother, mom has a really good sense of what's going on. You know, it is more focused on what the neighbors think than on what the child thinks. But it can also be communal situations or extended family or more than one mother or just feeling, you know, for better or worse, raised by a community rather than by a person. But that, what one of the things I'm interested in, I think almost more than knowing who her mother is, it will be very interesting to see who her siblings are. With that Jupiter and Venus in her third house, and the rule of it conjunct Mercury in her second, it may be that she has adopted siblings that are a great resource to her, but it looks to me like, you know, her mother may never be able to really emotionally connect, though I think it would be very healing for them to share stories. But I'm looking at the potential for, you know, there may be some sibling activity going on that would be of more actual engagement with her. So,
yeah,
and again, it may just be that her adopted siblings come through for her during this time, but
or actually other siblings through the original mother, through the birth.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That she may never have known. And it may be getting in touch with them might be as important to her as getting in touch with the mother.
Mm-hmm. Now, when my brother is adopted, and when my brother found four siblings of his that had been also put up for adoption by the same parents, it only brought us closer. And, you know, we're very close. So I'm not presuming which way that sense of a sibling resource will go, but I think there may be more playing out on that side than anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, when I see this much Capricorn, the Capricorn and the Saturn issues up affecting her guts, is I would ask her, it feels like under stress and duress here, that she's having trouble with minerals in her system, and that may be affecting all these other parts of her body. And I would ask her to get tested for, you know, calcium, magnesium levels and zinc levels. And if, when in doubt, to really support and supply herself with plenty of zinc and calcium and magnesium. Because calcium deficiency, often when people think that they're eating very well, especially if they're vegetarian, as my family has been, there can be a zinc deficiency, long reason why, but that zinc deficiency then starts cell dysplasia, which can bring in precancerous conditions and lowers the immune system suddenly, and it gets much worse under stress. And I'm wondering, with Saturn having such a key feature and having just gone over her Virgo Pisces seesaw, and Saturn having stationed in her eighth and ruling her 12th house cusp and her south node in Capricorn, if that's something that might be helpful to take care of her health. Because the emotional issues, supporting all the minerals in her system and her friendly flora, and, you know, really looking at that nutritional edge of this, and will help. And that it may be something that she needs to keep. Her progressed moon will conjunct Neptune in about a year. And certainly for the next few months, while Mars is going through Virgo, that she needs to be very kind to herself. You know, just prioritize healing, that she has also the right to be cared for while still being well, which not every moon in Pisces, moon in Aquarius gets the information. It's more like you have to be sick to get attention, and that she needs to give herself incredible attention and support from other people and therapy for just going through putting all these pieces together. She can do that while she's well.
Mm-hmm.
So really taking care of that side of herself, really supporting the nutrition. And it looks like the worst gets past as Mars moves off that in a few months. And then a year from now, it will look very different when her progressed moon finishes its conjunction with Neptune and goes into the 10th house. I think, you know, this is a year of really re-educating her whole mind-body system to this new self.
Mm-hmm. And this new reality, you know, that she found her.
Yeah,
Aquarians, all that Aquarian has trouble with the emotions. And so the operating system for air's opposite energy, what flares up when it is under stress is water, which is the emotions, because intellect kind of push, you know, it pops it and it says, okay, flare the emotions, ding, ding. And so the emotions come riding in and the air sign goes, but, I don't have emotions, but yeah, you do. Your body's telling you, pay attention to us. We'll let you know when we're ready. And Aquarians often, I mean, I have Aquarius rising. I often force myself to do things because we get anxious, and then we just push through. We just tell the body to shut up. We're going to go do it. And instead of listening to the body that says, I'm really nervous, and calming that, giving that energy a little opportunity to speak to you. So so we wish you really good luck with this, Leslie. You know, you're very brave for looking. You're very brave for finding her. You're very brave for even thinking about it. So honor yourself for the bravery and the journey you've taken to find her. And you're also starting a new major cycle. So this is a really good time to find her, because you're beginning a new cycle of understanding on a very deep level where you come from as Pluto begins to go through your 12th house, to understand your heritage, to understand what your roots are, to understand your background. So be really kind to yourself and honor yourself at the same time for the work you've done so far.
You're also moving, out of a year of kind of reassessment of every part of your life. The solar arc is just passing 45 degrees, where it's semi-square. All the planets are semi-square to the natal one. So every part of your life is sort of up for review, and kind of the big thing that comes up with that is, okay, what can I say I did right? What can I say I'm deficient in? And how am I going to work with that whole bag of stuff for the next 45 years? And you're at a good point with that now, because you've been through the review process, and so you've made decisions and said, this is going to change, some things are not going to change. So focus on the things you decided you can work with.
Cool. Yes.
So keep us posted. Let us know how it turns out. We're rooting for you. You got three of us going cheer. So, very cool. All right, and I do have a caller, so let me pick up the call. Hello, caller. How are you? Who are you? Lou?
Doing great. How are you?
We're good.
Good.
Really enjoy the show. You guys are just fantastic.
You offer
a lot of solace and a lot of comfort. Really appreciate that.
Great.
Curious about the eclipses.
The eclipses are coming. The eclipses are coming.
I think they're hitting my 12th and 6th houses, and I'm not really quite sure how to interpret that.
You want to give us your birth information and we can take a look at it?
You bet. March 24th, 1965. 12:05 p.m. Urbana, Illinois.
Well, you have Pluto going back and forth over your moon and Mars trining it tonight, so there's a lot going on in your chart, no matter which way you look at it.
Boy, I was laughing when Anne was saying how beat up she felt. It's like, I hear you.
Tired.
Yeah, your body is just shaking. I mean, your whole system is gearing up for some good changes. But I can imagine that sometimes you just need to sleep and integrate.
Yes.
You know, you can just feel like your psyche is morphing and needs room to do it.
Well, and
it's been going on for a while. You have an Aries, Sun, Moon, and Capricorn, Cancer rising. Is that right?
Yeah.
With Venus crossing over, with Venus right on your ascendant today, which is why we're talking to you. and that's lovely. And Anne, what do you see about the coming eclipses?
Well, the eclipses look like they're going to be landing in 12 and 6, like you noticed, and they're at 4 and at 19. So the one that I would be more interested in is the one that's towards the back end, the one that's in July. And what they usually do is they bring up stories that are unfinished. So you're going to go back to January when they had been the last time and kind of say, okay, what's the unfinished story? And that moon in Capricorn has been under a lot of developmental tension lately, with Pluto on it and also as the ruler of your chart. So the work, the work, home, life, health balance is critical. And so it's going to pop. The other thing the nodes are going to do is square your Sun and Aries up there at the tippy top of your chart. So this can be major changes in the work environment would be one of the things I would watch for. And possibly, you know, boss leaving, change in the boss direction, and then you getting a new responsibility come the a change in responsibility, maybe not a new responsibility, coming as the July eclipses roll in. Because these eclipses are all about the authority figures moving on, Saturn saying leave and go, do something else. And we're each being asked to step up into our own authority. And with your moon in Capricorn, you know, you've been working hard there, plus you've got Saturn opposite your Venus. So it could be
and
a change in work or some kind
of
change in structure.
And I think it's
going to
be, I completely agree with Anne, and I think it's going to be in your favor, though, as your progressed moon is now at 27 Leo, and in 3 months we'll be moving into Virgo and trining Mars.
Trining the natal moon.
And trying the natal moon from the second house of material resources into the hardworking, boy, do you define yourself by your work, sixth house. You know, it's going to be so important for you to have a strong sense of identity that is not about your work, because you're going to be working a hell of a lot. And you can get lost in your work and lose your center with that. And get more focused on intensity, and you do really well under pressure. But I'd like to see you with a stronger sense of identity, so that your feelings, your Venus and Pisces don't get all, your sensitivity doesn't get lost in the intensity of the work.
Yeah, interesting.
Does that make sense?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'm back in school for a career change and starting a job, actually, that'll probably be full swing going in July, you know, part-time, supplementing school. So, yeah, it's very easy to get lost, most definitely.
And just out of curiosity, what field did you leave and what field are you going to, if you would mind sharing that with us?
Oh, no, not at all. I'm a librarian by training for years, a researcher and teacher, and am going into nursing and want to do research as well. I've always been interested in
healthcare. Yeah, but you know, you're such a doer. Your chart is so good with emergencies and so good under pressure and such a doer that even though that Cancer rising has loved being in a librarian, and that moon in Capricorn, you have a phenomenal work ethic, and that third house, you have Uranus, Mars, and Pluto lined up in Virgo in the third house. I would love to put you, I mean, you may be good in, you're good with research, you'd like to keep going. That's that insatiable curiosity of that lineup in the third house. But I would love to see you working around the emergency room or in real trauma, that you're good under pressure.
That's funny. I have a couple of dear friends who keep pushing me towards critical care or the emergency room.
Yeah. Well, it'll keep you busy and happy. I think that's the that's the key. Yeah.
You don't think it's more of a nerve jangler than it is, you know?
I think it definitely is
adrenaline.
A nerve jangler. Yeah. And
that's
I think
where we want
do
you
that
to
kind
have,
of work
take care
for
of yourself
reasons.
Away from work.
Yeah.
If you're really taking care of yourself and you have a sense of yourself away from the work, you'll be able to do that deep work.
Yeah. Good point. Good point. Well, hey, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Keep us posted on what happens on the eclipses. We love updates.
Yeah.
You bet. You guys have a great evening.
Thanks.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay. Bye. We heard the British lady call us and say a few seconds left, so we have to hang up and go off into the night. So watch for the Jupiter Uranus. We just did have Jupiter get attacked by an asteroid, and there was a fireball on the big guy when Jupiter went into Aries. And he's joining with Uranus in the next couple days, so we can expect fiery explosions or fiery eruptions or fiery something in your own life, in the Aries house, and in the world. So watch for that. And my name is Ann Ortley. I am an astrologer in New York at my bright red desk, and I'm saying goodnight, and I'm joined in this evening by Mark.
Mark Waltz.
In New York?
Yeah, New York.
New York.
And this is Heather Rowan Robin speaking to you from Minnesota.
Right.
Good night and have a wonderful week ahead.
And join us next week. Tell your friends. Take care. Bye-bye.